Welcome to the Sustainable Jungle Podcast. We share uplifting stories from people all over the world working to make positive change. I'm Joy, and in this episode, we chat to Misha Teasdale, the founder and tree EO of GreenPop South Africa. GreenPop is a social enterprise that plants trees through urban greening and reforestation projects, spreads environmental awareness, and activates people through green festivals and workshops across Southern Africa. We visited GreenPop's Eden Festival of Action held in Knysna, South Africa, a small town hit by devastating forest fires and in desperate need of re-greening. We interviewed Misha in the middle of a very high-energy tree planting day in a forest right next to the ocean. So you can hear the waves, the birds, and the delighted shrieks of high school students throughout the episode. We discuss many things, but most importantly, we cover how the very special GreenPop events make exceptionally positive change on more than just the environmental front. We were blown away by the energy, love, and care that defined the Festival of Action for us. So as you listen to this episode, we would encourage you to think of someone who may be interested in attending one of these life-changing festivals and share this episode with them. Or perhaps you might like to head over to South Africa and participate yourself. You'll be able to find the talking points and the links to all the festivals in our show notes at sustainablejungle.com/podcast. Now, please enjoy being blown away by Misha Teasdale. How are you doing?
I'm fairly exhausted, but really exhilarated, pumped, got lots of good stuff going on.
This is the GreenPop Festival of Action. Mm-hmm. We are thrilled to be here. It's been an absolute privilege to just witness everything that you guys are doing. It's really exciting. Let's start at the beginning. We want to know a little bit more about you because we haven't got to chat too much.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your background. Where were you born and where did you grow up?
So I am Cape Town, South Africa, through and through. And I grew up kind of in the southern suburbs, leafy southern suburbs, very privileged. And I spent most of my time in South Africa. I did have a short stint driving across the continent of Africa when I was about 24, which was really exciting and awesome. Really eye-opening, beautiful experience. And I also did a year in London for my sins. I suppose from about high school age, I have been inspired about design and design as a means for creating solutions around social issues. And I'd done a lot of volunteering and I was quite enthusiastic about recycling for many years. And I studied industrial design straight after school and did 4 years a BTEC, and part of it was like a sustainability course. So I was quite inspired about that space specifically, how you could create solutions to problems through design, both interface and human design and behavior change, as well as creating products. But obviously that also comes with a lot of negative externalities. And yeah, straight after university, I had a multitude of awesome opportunities, mostly in the media space. And I started being very involved with film and photography, producing, filmmaking, editing. And then in 2010, I got a really epic job to fly around the world and do a documentary for Volkswagen. What was beautiful about it is essentially over 3.5 months, I got to go to 12 countries. I saw 4 continents. I got to hang out with my baby brother in New York. I went to as far east as Russia, which was super cool. I got to Mexico and eat nachos and like the full shebang. It was really epic. And the reality of it though is we flew 360,000 kilometers. So had to kind of bite down on that, and I suppose in a way felt quite responsible having to have this amazing opportunity, but also feeling like the opportunity comes with responsibility. It was myself and a good friend of mine, Rowan, who were doing it. It was his company, got the job, and we were like, we need to do something about it. So we decided to plant 1,000 trees. That was kind of the mission in the beginning.
That was your way of a carbon offsetting.
Mm.
Really?
We'd worked out vaguely about 661 trees that we needed to plant. We rounded it up to 1,000. I'd previously done quite a few social projects up to that point, driving through Africa, which was like a lot of fundraising and getting people together. I'd run an event called Night of 1,000 Drawings a few times, which was essentially kind of like creative collective of people coming together to raise money for charity through drawings. And so I was inspired about the opportunity of getting a lot of people together in order to make something beautiful and significant to happen. And yeah, we were like, let's just bring Arbor Month back. Let's plant 1,000 trees. Let's connect South Africans. We live in such a divided country. And I feel like one of the things that's very clear, it's so evident, it's like you look at these leafy green suburbs where people of privilege live, and then you go out to kind of informal settlements and those kind of spaces, it's so evident. Schools, I mean, we have 27,000 schools plus minus in South Africa, and I've been to a lot of them, and we have like over 400 urban greening sites that we've done in the Western Cape, many of which are schools, and they look pretty close to penitentiaries. They're not like schools. I wouldn't be inspired to go to these spaces. And we thought, what a beautiful bridge. What a great way to get South Africans in their comfort zone, way out of their comfort zone, and connecting. I think for us, trees in the beginning was a really nice go-to around the environmental space and our specific environmental footprint. But it very quickly became evident that there's such a metaphor there. And I think that's what's special about trees, is like you bring people together, they work hard, they reconnect with nature, and more importantly, they reconnect with each other across culture, across ages. Like we're all on the same level when you plant trees, which is very cool.
That is so cool. So you've come at it from a people perspective as opposed to the trees and the environment perspective.
I suppose the trees for me was a starting place. And I think the longer I've been doing this, the more I've realized the positive outcomes that can come out of it. So in the beginning, we were very much about the trees, but very quickly you realize, wow, look at all these people celebrating together and making epic stuff happening and holding hands and dancing and laughing and essentially doing stuff and having conversations that before that would never have happened. And even in a context like this, these people are largely in a space where they could be on a holiday somewhere, you know, on a beach or with their friends or playing video games, or in the adults week sipping a pina colada and chilling. But they've decided to come out and be part of something. And I think that sense of active citizenship is very strong. And what it does, it starts a journey for me. You know, I think when people start to sit in their own responsibility and feel a sense of, I can be an active citizen, something beautiful begins. And the fact that we have a week or 2 week or 3 week long immersion experience, that immersion for me is really important, because ultimately it allows for you to feel like you're deep in it. You have all these kind of behavior change stuff. You're having all these really significant conversations with people. Every day you're just getting like exhilarated, you're getting shaken up, you're getting facts that you were like, wow, I had no idea. And you're surrounded by other proper environmentalists. So kind of having it from all angles in a very celebratory way. So it's no one's making anyone feel guilty here. We're all like, oh man, we're going to change the world. This is epic.
It reminds me, last night we were having a quick chat and you mentioned, Misha, that you're not worried about nature. Nature will be fine. Whether we're here or not, it's going to survive. It's we that you're worried about. And a lot of this has to do with humans and reconnecting humans so that ultimately we still have a place on this earth. I wonder if you can just reflect on those words last night.
I think more broadly, because we're so rapidly urbanizing, there is this sense that we are separate from nature and potentially that we don't need nature. It's interesting, if you go into a classroom and you ask the kids in a classroom, go and touch nature, their instinct wouldn't be to touch themselves, which is quite an interesting dynamic. Like they would want to go out and touch a tree or grass or a little animal, but the thinking isn't that they're, I am nature as well. If we're going to get people to protect nature in a way that it allows for us to continue to have a relationship with nature that serves us in a positive way, we need to celebrate nature. And in order to celebrate nature, we need to fall in love with it. We need to spend time in it. We need to have happy moments in it. We need to bring our friends and our family, and we need to interact with it. I mean, the world has been going for however many billion years. You know, the value of what humans bring is insignificant, probably in the minus. And ultimately, one day, it's possible, we'll be dead and gone. And that's okay, because the planet will continue. And probably we'll have many other forms of extinction and many other beautiful species and bacteria and all sorts of things. And I think it's quite an exciting thought in a way. It means like it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. But what we've got is right here and right now. And what is the best that we can do with that time? And I feel like if we can get people to reconnect with nature in a very meaningful way, get people to understand, I am nature. And that's such a beautiful thing. I am nature. And go spend time in nature, because ultimately it's so healing. It gives off beautiful, happy endorphins. One of the reasons why we take vitamin B12 is because we don't eat food out of the ground anymore. Because all those positive bacteria are removed. Everything comes in a polystyrene package. You know, everything is chopped to ultimate convenience. And if we can spend time with our hands in the soil, reconnecting and getting those happy endorphins and bacteria, etc., and collaborating with each other, collaborating beyond what is selfish. Because I think a lot of the time when you're in a scenario like this, when you're working together, and I'll test it, I've been to many a tree planting festival, that's what we do, and you're on a hill and you've just planted 5,000 trees with like 500, 600 volunteers, that emotion that you're experiencing of, I haven't just reconnected with nature now, I have gone well and beyond, I have now entered into a tribe, I feel like I belong. That's something beautiful. And it's that belonging as part of something significant, which I think is really important.
On the Green Pop website, it says that between 2000 and 2030, urban population will more than double. Urban space will increase by 700%. Those stats are incredibly scary. Is part of what you're doing at Green Pop also to combat those stats and to neutralize the negative effects that come with it?
So I believe that Green Pop isn't necessarily here to save the world, or at least the humanity within the world. Definitely not. I think we're as much a catalyst to try and get people to feel like they need to reconnect with nature, where we can work with other NGOs and collaborate with them. I see that there is a massive importance of including ecosystem services within urban environments, for runoff of water systems, for creating shade, for managing microclimates, natural air conditioning, and also to just include nature within the spaces that we're operating on a 24/7 basis. You know, I think it lends itself back to the question of, we are nature, and you know, we can't remove ourselves too far from nature. I think societies that have been discluding trees and other types of natural systems within their cities are probably doing a massive disservice to the society that they're within. And you're probably going to find that there's all sorts of negative externalities like depression and strained water systems and a lot of pollution. Even just having major motorways and having a lot of trees along them can have such a service for keeping that air fairly clean and removing the carbon dioxide out of the that environment. So I think what we need to do is build smart cities. And there are a multitude of examples of these around the world. And we can do our best to reduce population explosions. And I think there's definitely some value in people moving from urban spaces to cities, and that, you know, they're getting better healthcare, probably going to get better education, etc. And so we need to be able to work out, how do we service that?
Yeah.
How do we make it function? It would be lovely if people could stay in the countryside, but actually it's just not a possibility. You can't force people to live in a place where they don't want to live. And a lot of the time, especially in an African context, because it's been so decentralized, a lot of the valuable urban services are so centralized around urban hubs, and you're not getting all these things out in rural places. So it's a reality, and we can't get around it. What we need to do is work out, how do we make these cities as smart as possible to include nature as much as possible, and also in a way make sure that the systems that are happening within the cities also serve nature and don't take away from it. You know, like this whole plastic revolution that we're experiencing right now, it's so exciting.
It's amazing.
All these African cities are saying, actually we've had enough, like we don't need all this plastic waste. Single-use plastic is a thing of the past. We need to work out other ways, and the thing is, we have the technology. It's just a lot of dinosaur thinking.
And talking about the green cities and smart cities, what sort of exciting innovations have you seen recently?
So I suppose there's a lot of things happening. And I mean, my forefront is on the plant-based stuff and tree systems. I think what I've been excited about is seeing in places like Japan and Singapore, probably in a few places in Australia and the States, a lot of vertical gardens and treetop gardens, where plants and trees are really being included in urban planning, and in some places it's actually kind of mandatory. It's, you know, you get points or whatever it is, and they're really trying to include that so that people that are living in these skyscrapers aren't necessarily removed from an ecosystem. And what's exciting about that is it'll allow for bird species and insect species to actually be able to thrive like hundreds of meters into the air, and people to feel like, wow, there's an ecosystem just outside on my balcony, which is really exciting. Another thing that I'm excited about is the fact that there are buildings now that they're building which are almost entirely self-sustainable. So they're creating their own energy, they're capturing their own water, they're reusing water for the gray water systems, they're potentially watering these plants, and essentially they're creating an entire community within a building, which could have some negative externalities around it. You know, you might find that people become insular or isolated. But I think if they're geared right, you feel like you can create the supportive ecosystem where you've got all the power. We don't need to bring things from great distances. I think there's a lot of benefit that can happen as long as people still connect as humans above and beyond the services that those buildings would provide.
I've heard of those communities that pull together that have the different buildings and they have shared services. So they do have to connect in some way. So that could solve that problem potentially. Yeah. That's a very cool idea.
Yeah. And I think what's also exciting about it is now that everything's becoming a lot more online and we're able to work so remotely, that you can operate within a space like that and pretty much have everything that you need. So you don't necessarily need to jump in your car and travel great distances to sort yourself out with this, that, and the other. It's like everything could happen right there. You know, you travel when you're actually just wanting to do leisure, which would be a great idea.
Now, we're actually at a Green Pop event right now, which is a tree planting festival, the Festival of Action in Knysna. We're like sitting out in the on the pathway that goes down to the area where we're planting trees. We've got the ocean sounds around us. We've got birds chirping behind us. It's a magical environment with lots of very passionate young people who are very enthusiastically planting trees as we speak. But let's go back to the beginning and tell us what actually is Green Pop. What is it that you guys do? How did you guys get it started? When did it start? Tell us the whole story.
Alrighty. So in 2010, I got that job from Volkswagen, flew around the world, did the documentary, back end of it. Myself and my partner, Rowan, were like, we need to do something about it. So we decided to plant 1,000 trees. And we ran various campaigns, creative things, to get people excited about what we were doing, to get signups for people to volunteer, as well as to get people to buy trees, or at least conceptual trees at that point. We had these little pieces of cardboard made up with a stamp that said, join the tree volution, and on the backside, a number, essentially, which was the number of trees. And we would canvass people on the streets and get people to buy these trees at 50 rand each, which we were like, in the month's time, we're gonna go plant these trees, please get involved. And unfortunately, people were super keen. They were amped to get involved. And it was quite a beautiful experience, like going through this process of speaking to people about something that didn't actually exist yet and having them feel like, I have enough faith in what you're saying to like give you the money and believe that this piece of cardboard, what it represents is what's actually going to happen. And then, yeah, we did a whole bunch of creative campaigns to get the ball rolling. And on the 1st of September, 2010, we planted our first trees, planted
2010.
Five.
Yeah. That's a long time ago now.
Yeah, so 8.5 years ago.
Five trees.
Five trees in about 4.5 hours. Never planted a tree before. Didn't own a spade. Didn't have a pickup truck, Bucky.
Oh, wow. So where did you plant them?
At a place called Masipomalele, which is near Komaki.
Okay.
Beautiful little part of the world. I had actually been volunteering there for like maybe 3 years already. So I was quite connected with the space already, and it felt like a good starting place to kind of my next journey. And yeah, we planted the five trees, and then every day for the next month, we were out there planting more and more and more trees. And then the last day, we planted our 1,000th tree with Woolworths, one of the local retailers here in South Africa. And we had 300 trees go in the ground, 250 staff from Woolworths. It was this big production day. Walkie-talkies, maps on bonnets of vehicles, 14 different locations. We had police escorts, and a ward counselor came out and did a talk, and catering and t-shirts and like the full shebang. I had a loudhailer. It was proper.
Fun.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah.
The real deal.
It was the real deal. So we'd gone from like this very humble little operation of kind of like scratching our heads, like, oh, how are we going to do this? To this beautiful, big, heaving operation of lots of volunteers and just feeling like, wow, we just grew up in a month. Like, look what we managed to achieve. And felt quite exciting. And that for me was kind of like a big step forward. It was, we've gone through this whole month of just missioning through things, and then all of a sudden it kind of ended with this bang, and that was like the last tree. But the reality of it was we'd actually raised enough money to plant 1,800 trees. So small conundrum, I still had another 800 trees to plant. And then a whole bunch of stuff started happening. One of the local iced tea brands, Boss Iced Tea, they just recently started, and we met up with one of their directors, and he was like, I love what you're doing. Would you guys be keen to plant trees for us on an ongoing basis? They kind of mentored us through starting a pledge, which is super cool. And what that allowed for us to do is kind of plan in the future what our scaling was going to be, and then understand, like, okay, if we could get this many pledges in, then we know every year we've got a target of 5,000 trees or 7,000 trees, and slowly but surely we were able to build it up and then host festivals where we would then go and plant those trees en masse, which was such a fortunate kind of shift forward. Yeah, we entered a social enterprise business plan competition late 2010, early 2011. We hadn't written a business plan, but South African government, Department of Labor and Industry were like, you guys need to enter this competition. So we stayed up all night, wrote the business plan. Mostly my partner, Lauren, wrote it. Yeah, we won. Hey, we got our first little bit of seed capital. And yeah, it was really exciting for us to feel like we're kind of very grassroots, and we still didn't own a bucky, and we're literally just borrowing vehicles and kind of keeping our tools and our trees at like a shared space. And next thing, we kind of grew up a little bit more. And yeah, things just unfolded from there. We started a reforestation program. We continued doing urban greening. We started a way that corporates could come and pay for the experience of tree planting. It's kind of a way for us to have a revenue generating activity, which allowed for us to pay salaries and employ people and get people facilitating on a every week basis. And I think at most we were running up to 60 plant days a year, taking tourist groups and school groups and corporate groups out to schools, and yeah, giving them the experience of tree planting and connecting with these young people who a lot of the time have never even left the formal settlements. And so to have that experience where they're kind of, I suppose, connecting on many levels and feeling quite positive about the whole thing was really great. So in the beginning it was like we're paddling a lot, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh my gosh, there's a tidal wave behind us. This is intense. I think in a way South Africa was ready to have something that was fun and accessible and in that greening space. Like, people wanted that outlet. A lot of people signing up to volunteer and jump in and get involved, which was great for us. Like, we were like, wow, just couldn't ask for more support. It was so amazing. People were super stoked to get involved.
I want to chat about the Festival of Action now, which is where we're on now, and it's a multi-week event. Mm-hmm. What is the structure and the premise, and what are you guys hoping to achieve with this festival?
The Festival Action started as actually Trees for Zambia. So 6.5 years ago, I got a call from a chicken farmer. He was like, I'm loving what you guys are doing. And we were like, thank you, that's so cool. And he was like, I have a chicken farm. And because I've got a chicken farm, I have a lot of manure. And because I have a lot of manure, I've got all these trees. And he was like, you guys should come to Livingston and plant trees. And I'd been to Livingston on two occasions prior, which for me was super exciting, just kind of going beyond and doing something that was a challenge. I'm a bit of a sucker for challenges. And I suppose part of me also was hungry for another adventure and seeing how far we could take things. I didn't want to be stuck as this little Cape Town tree planting organization. I wanted to see us as we could go anywhere, we could do anything. Like, we go to Senegal, we go to France, we could go to South America somewhere, like wherever's possible. And I had some friends in the Livingston area that were working within the environmental space already. And so myself and Lauren went out there and we did some research, and we worked out that there was a definite need for some education and tree planting. And so in 2012, for the first time, we hosted this event called Trees for Zambia. And for the next 5 years, we went to Livingston and planted trees, lots of them. But we quickly realized that tree planting was not the solution. and that we needed a more holistic solution. And so we migrated the name from Trees for Zambia to the Festival of Action. And I think what was really exciting for us is, yes, we're a tree planting organization, but actually there's so many things we can do. And so we were inviting our community, our partners, other NGOs to come and get involved. And so it wasn't just about GreenPop. And we had this wealth of knowledge and skill sets, and people were keen. And so we started like running all these different programs. So we did art programs, and we did waste stuff, and we did permaculture stuff, and looking at alternative livelihoods for forests. And all of it felt for me like, wow, imagine the possibility. So we just continued going with it. And it's been 6 years of doing it in Livingston, and it has been beautiful. We are now at a place where we thought, let's look at the crossroads and see why we're doing it in Livingston, and would it be more beneficial to do something else in Livingston? And we're now looking at more of a development approach to our Livingston project, getting grant funding and doing work on the ground with proper practitioners. And ultimately what happened from there was where this big fire happened in Meisner, and we got a lot of people contacting us saying, hey, there was this massive fire, can you guys get involved? And I think a lot of people here really wanted action and needed some sort of facilitation and were keen to get like properly stuck in. And so it felt like an easy fit for us.
Good timing.
Yeah, it was good timing. I mean, obviously the fire is an absolute tragedy, but a lot of beautiful things came out of that fire. And I mean, one of the things is that a huge amount of the alien was removed. And it allows for a kind of a clean slate. You know, we lost a lot of indigenous forest, milkwood, kind of like what we're sitting in right now. But a lot of it was alien. In fact, I think 99% of it was alien.
Alien, you mean trees that do not belong here?
Non-indigenous trees, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, in a South African context, they're a part of our reality. They are very useful. You know, if we weren't cutting down the alien trees, we'd be cutting down the indigenous trees for building and firewood and da 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 da. But a lot of it is kind of just gone haywire, and you know, every road is just kind of bush everywhere, and it burns really hot. So it was beneficial on that front. And so off the bat of that, we were like, okay, let's do some scoping exercises. Let's do a bit of research on the ground, meet up with some of the relevant role players. And I think November was our big push. And then we started marketing it and getting it out into our bigger community, saying, come join us, come make some magic happen. And I, for one, am very excited to be here. It feels like a really great shift. There's a lot of work to be done. And even just like landing here now and having done the last 2.5 weeks worth of being on the ground and a week and a half's worth of work, so many more things are coming up where people are like, wow, we need trees. We need to collaborate on this. We've got these like value resources, stuff that we can share with you or give you guys a sponsor. So it feels like a really significant shift for GreenPop, and I feel like there's a lot of beautiful partners to collaborate with here.
For the benefit of the listeners, to give a sense of Misha's work ethic, he's also got a 7-week-old baby.
So I've just had a baby. His name is Arden Bear Teasdale.
Yeah. Arden Bear! Yeah. Oh, that's too cute.
He's magic. He doesn't like sleeping too much.
Okay.
And he can be quite loud. He wants people to know that he's here.
Yeah, right. Fair enough.
And my beautiful partner at GreenPop and my wife for the last 4 years is taking the majority of the brunt of that. I'm trying to free up some space here and there. Like this morning's team meeting, I took him for 2 hours and he was conducting the team meeting with me, which is great. I mean, I feel like the best way to raise a child is within your life, you know, and not kind of isolating yourself too much. And, yeah, there's need for quiet spaces and nurturing and softness, but there's also need for having it being included in your life, not kind of shutting down everything. And I feel really privileged to have my child here. I think he's going to grow up to be a very magical
He's going
to
be
an eco warrior. Nailing
The tree planter.
So the festival, let's just go back to that. Who comes, first of all? Yep. Students.
And what is it?
Yes. What do you actually do here?
So the festival action is 21 days of action. People come for a week. Some people come for 2 weeks. But the program runs week on week. First 2 weeks are specifically geared to high school students, though we have got quite a few 20-something-year-olds who are more keen to be in this space. Maybe they're studying to be teachers, maybe they're interested in youth work, whatever it is, so they have opted to come to the youth weeks. And then the last week is an adults week. The program is pretty similar all 3 weeks. And what do? Well, we start off with a bit of an orientation. First day, we go to a place called Gokama Nature Reserve. It's a bit of a tongue twister, which was literally obliterated by the fires. And we use that as an anchor to give people some context to this space, to what's happening more broadly in South Africa, but also to what's happening in the world. I think it's really important for us to be able to set the tone for what's going to happen in the next week, and also understand what is the role that we play within the environment and the way in which we have changed the world. I mean, this landscape 1,000 years ago was a very different landscape. Essentially, many sacred spots here, and they were living off the land in a very holistic way. And now we're here kind of bringing in our big machinery and our plants that are not supposed to be here and have drastically changed this landscape. And so quite interesting to start that dialogue. Post that, we go back to camp and we have a rotation station where everyone gets to have a 15-minute little window of what the rest of the week's going to hold, which is quite cool because ultimately through that, they can decide, these are the things I'm excited about because there's too many things that happen in the week for you to get to do everything. Which is okay because there's lots to do and we always give you your first two options. And then outside of that, the next 4 days is tree planting, permaculture, natural buildings, building with natural materials. We do like a waste education where you build things from waste materials and see how waste can be a resource, even if it's a short-term resource. We have an eco art project or a conservation art project where we look at art as a means for starting a dialogue around environmental space. Beekeeping workshops, forest immersion workshops. We've got a conservation musical program where we're making a conservation song of sorts. And then in the evenings, we like to entertain Green Pop. We like to make it popular and fun and get people excited about the space. So we have speaker evenings, we have quiz nights, and then we have a talent show or music night where we essentially bring all the participants together and say, like, who wants to share their jazz? Like, what have you got going on in your life? And all sorts of people get up and do something fun. And it's quite a nice thing because ultimately we've been living like a family for a whole week and you're feeling very comfortable in your skin finally. And so people want to share, like they want to get in there and kind of share their journeys.
That's happening tonight.
That's happening tonight.
How exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be super cool. I love it. To see mostly young people like getting up there and like singing passionately or playing an instrument or, yeah, doing something fun or silly, whatever it is.
I think. But even the ad hoc speeches last night on various topics was also incredibly heartfelt.
Just moving.
And just poignant and truth. A lot of those kids spoke what they were feeling, and I thought that was so healthy to see that coming from that generation, so in touch with their surroundings and how they feel. It's just very healthy.
Cool, thank you.
It blew my mind that they were also so smart. Yeah. You know, like a lot of times we've heard on this trip of ours where we've interviewed lots of people, and a lot of people are very concerned about the youth of today and are very worried that kids are not connecting with nature and that the next generation is going to fail. And then you see kids like this, and it's like, it blows your mind. And now it's open to anyone. It's not just South Africans, right?
So it is open to anyone globally. Last year we had, I think it was 15 or 16 different countries represent, Japan, Alaska, we've had South America, we had Australia, so all over. Tanzania, like a little rural village in Tanzania, kids coming from there. So literally it's like this coming together, it's a festival action. And we want to create this global sense of responsibility and have people come from everywhere so that they can share their perspective and culture and get people to feel, I suppose, comfortable having conversations and understanding different perspectives. And I mean, that it lends itself to last night's speaker evening where people can share that kind of information and also the mentor session. So 3 times, 4 times a week, we have these connects and we want to get into deeper conversations. And we want people to feel like this is a brave space. You can have these conversations. And ultimately, when you leave this space and you go into your world beyond here, you feel like, hey, I do feel comfortable talking about that. And I can actually create that space in my own friendship groups or with my parents or with my peers or my teachers or just other people I engage with. And maybe I don't agree with something, or maybe we do need to talk about this stuff. And this is such a great catalyst to kind of allow for people to feel like it's good to feel uncomfortable.
I've heard lots of people talking about this being a tribe, which I love that terminology. It's really cute and it's appropriate for Africa as well. And I just wondered if, and exactly building on what you were just saying about how this is sending, it's like a little eco-warrior generator, this thing. And I wonder if you could share a story maybe where you've heard of one of these eco-warriors that you've created, these little tree planters that you've created, go out into the world and do something amazing. Has there been any story of impact where you've been like, wow, I feel so proud to have been a part of that?
So, there's actually so many of them. I have real relationships with a lot of the guys and girls that come and volunteer with us on different programmatic things. And maybe just loosely, I have quite a few that get me on WhatsApp. And once they got me on WhatsApp, you betcha they're going to start asking me questions all over the place. And what's great about it is it's a lot of the questions that I'm getting asked were the questions I asked when I was probably their age around recycling things or starting a program, or they're going and they want to do tree planting and they need to get like clearance for something around those, you know, if it's a new space or whatever it is. And so, I haven't got any specific long-term anecdotes, but there's, just a lot of young people out there that have been reaching out to me and saying, hey, we're doing this. Like, we're going to host a concert for a cause, and this is the cause we want to run. Can you give us some advice? Like, part of it's going to be like all the parents who come, they've got to measure their carbon footprint, and all that money is going to go to one of our environmental programs here.
Amazing.
Like, wow, you guys like totally took all the responsibility there and ran with it and doing big things. I think that's one of the special things about my journey was like, we just wanted to plant 1,000 trees. That was it. And when you think about 1,000 trees, when we planted 500 trees today, like it doesn't seem too far out. We're like, that's pretty manageable. Like I could get 100 people together. That's manageable. And we could all plant 5 trees and well, then we're done. And so as soon as you start to kind of break the elephant down into smaller pieces, it feels like, things are a lot more manageable than they seem. And I feel like that kind of messaging really allows for young people to feel like I can achieve these things. I just need to understand where to start.
And now they have the support system around them and the people that they meet become part of their network. And it, like you say, it gives them the courage and the bravery to go on and do things and tackle different problems in their own lives.
Is there anything special coming up for the Green Pop team for the rest of the year? Next year, I know you mentioned you've got an event in March coming up.
So every year is jam-packed full of fun and exciting ways to get active and not anxious for the planet.
Active and not anxious. Ooh, I need to remember that anxious. One.
So our next big mission is called the Festival of Trees. It's happening in the Eastern Cape, which is probably about 3 hours drive from here. It's in a place called Hogsback, beautiful part of the world. There's less than 1,000 Cape parrots left in the wild. And so we're rebuilding these ecosystems for the Cape parrots. So we're planting a lot of yellowwood trees and various other fruiting trees, which for us is super exciting. It's such a beautiful space. Following that, our next big, big tree plant will be in March. It's our annual Reforest Fest. And I'm hoping to plant anywhere between 10 and 12,000 trees next year in March. What's exciting about it is that every year we've grown it just a little bit, with more people coming, with the operational side of things kind of growing a little bit, the infrastructure, and then the workshops. Like for me, I love it when we have this beautiful, like hard working day with face paint and mud and tools and screaming and shouting and feeling like you're in this tribe and you get exhausted, but you're just like heart full open. And then you celebrate in the evening and the next day it's just like, bam, 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 more workshops than you know what to do with. Like all sorts, like emotional intelligence for kids, to forest immersion, to stargazing, to wood whittling, like anything you can imagine. We've got all sorts of those kinds of things happening. What's lovely about it is people go into the space having like really opened their heart, and now all of a sudden they're getting all these cool workshops and they feel like, hey, I could dig this. Like I could introduce these kinds of things into my own life. And so their curiosity is like super peaked, which is great.
I think we're going to have to come.
You're going to have to come. You should come.
I want to stargaze.
Please come. We had a lady from NASA. She was way too intelligent. I was just like, I don't even know what you're talking about, but it's very cool.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah, from NASA.
So what's been amazing about it is, I think because of the foundation that has been created, as soon as we're building up toward it, all of these things start kind of coming out of the woodwork, and people contact us, hey, this person's visiting from the States or from Europe or South America or somewhere on the continent. And it could literally be like, we've got this Sangoma coming, and he or she is just like super wise with like these kind of spirit things or like traditional storytelling or whatever it is. And so it's this beautiful mix of people. And yeah, I kind of, I'll set a theme with the team. We'll kind of like brainstorm, this is the theme for this year. And once we've done that, build a couple of workshop things, and then all of a sudden, like, there's mad fillers coming in from all over the place, and to the point of most of the time the team's like, there's way too many workshops, you need to stop now. I'm like, we just want more, please.
Just add stargazing, please.
We can't start workshops at 6 a.m. No one's gonna be there.
If you could send one piece of advice or a lesson to everybody in the world, what would it be?
If I had to ask the whole world to be cognizant of one thing, it would be start where you're at, and mostly start taking responsibility for yourself. Because I feel like if you start by understanding what you're eating and what you're consuming on a day-to-day basis and what you're saying to the people around you, that can then start emanating in a very beautiful way. You know? I started off as a regular Joe meat eater. I'd eat anything, I'd drink anything. And I've kind of gone through various iterations of my life, from being a flexitarian, a weekend meat eater, no beef, then no chicken, then only wild meat, then only wild meat on celebration days. So now I just eat eggs. And I don't know what the next step is going to be. But all through this, I've been like, I feel like I'm a lot more conscious of what I'm putting in my mouth. And if you are unconscious of what you're putting in your mouth, you're going to be unconscious about what comes out of your mouth and what's going on in your mind a lot of the time. I feel like it's a really good step in trying to drive this understanding that everything that we do has some sort of effect, a knock-on effect. You know, if we're willing to go into a supermarket and buy pre-cut, packaged, polystyrene, glad-wrapped chicken, you know, what was the journey that got there? What was the water footprint and the carbon footprint and the pain footprint of that chicken? Like, how did it come to be there? And what has society told you that makes it okay to eat that? So I feel like if we can start building around that, there's a lot of beautiful work that can happen. And I think the same goes for what you're consuming, you know, the technology you're consuming, the social media that you're consuming, how often you're consuming it, what you allow to come into your direct world, and start spending your time on things that matter, things that are significant. A lot of us are working ourselves to death or not doing any positive work at all. One day we're all going to die, and it's not going to be about how many cars do I have, or how much money do I have in my bank account, or how much stuff do I own. It's really going to be about, how significant was my life? How many significant, beautiful moments did I have with people that meant something to me? How much did I reach out? Did I add more than I subtracted? Those are the things that are going to essentially allow for that serotonin, that oxytocin, all the good hormones to perpetuate within you and keep healing you and keep you in a really good space.
And one lesson, one green, living, sustainable lesson for anybody out there, yeah, Misha, who wants to practice living a more conscious and better life.
I would say the one thing that I hold most dearest to me is being curious. So observation for me is everything. And with that is this consistent, this perpetual state of curiosity. Because if you're curious about things, then you're able and willing to ask questions. And by asking those questions, you can take more ownership of what's happening in your world. You know, if we're not curious, we're not reading labels, we're not understanding what negative externalities we're having on the world, we're not understanding how we're affecting our friends and our family and the actions we do, or the people that we're living with, or the apartment block, or the cities, or the schools, or whatever it is. But if we're curious in a way that we're not aggravating, we're just saying like, hey, how does that work? Or how come it's done like that? And if people can answer you, you'd be like, that doesn't make sense. Maybe we can work through this. As opposed to being aggressive or being in so many other ways that people have approached things, which I feel like isn't that productive. And I think that's a large part of what the environmental movement can get wrong, is having a very guilt-charged approach to changing the world, as opposed to a curiosity and a fun, a celebratory. For me, we gotta celebrate our wins, we gotta tell people about it, we gotta kill them with kindness, and just be curious, like ask the questions. Because the thing is, like, once you scratch the surface, and it might be your own surfaces or it might be other people's, then essentially it's in front of you, you know, and you open those doors, you're gonna just keep on opening them, and that's important.
And where can people find you? How can they support the work you do?
So if you want to physically find us, come to Whale Street in Cape Town, Boerkop, 61 Whale Street.
We're on the fifth floor. Actually called Whale Street?
Whale Street, yeah.
Did you pick that street because it was called Whale Street?
But I do love that street. It's a very, very cool
Boerkop street. With all the colourful, buildings. Wow, that is really, really pretty.
Feels like we're in a very special space in South Africa. If you want to find us on socials, we're on Instagram, Greenpop, Twitter, Greenpop, Facebook. Greenpop.
Cool. We'll put all those links in the description.
Please do. And then we've got a bunch of websites. You can go to greenpop.org where you can donate for trees. You can start a Running for Trees campaign if you're running marathons. You can do a Trees for Fees if you want to come to one of our events and you want to raise money to come to that event. If you want to check out any of our events, you can find it on greenpop.org, or you can go to one of our event websites, which is thereforestfest.com or thefestivalaction.com. But our main website can also take you there. And I'm Misha Teasdale, and you can find me on Twitter as well.
Thoroughly appreciate that. And just thank you for having us here in this beautiful part of the world. We are very, very inspired by the work you do.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you. And come back. Come plant some trees again. Thank you for coming all the way here and sharing this beautiful space with us. And thanks for also sharing all the good news. We need to share good news.
We are so excited about what the Greenpop team are doing to change communities through high-intensity greening. As one of many potential actions to take away from this episode, please, at the very least, visit the Greenpop website or socials and take a look at the remarkable work they do. And then tell other people about it. As always, thank you for listening. We are so grateful for your time, and we will see you for the next round of inspiration.